This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's James Kell from the Sleeper King Football Podcast. In fantasy football, sleepers can win you championships, and that's why I am here. Every episode is just 15 to 20 minutes long, every Tuesday through Friday. Subscribe to the Sleeper King Podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your pods.
Rami Makhlouf.
You don't want to overreact, you know, you want to keep perspective.
Nah, screw that. Hit the music, Robbie. Hit the music. Let's go.
Let's go! Fit the man for a gold jacket.
For those who don't like our people, that's tough. We like them.
Live and local on 670 The Score.
Go Bears.
Ah, that seems like so long ago. It is good to be with you on a Sunday morning. Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score. I got Sean Sears on the other side of the glass. And we got you at 312-644-6767. Want to hear from you throughout the morning. I'll be with you until noon. We'll also hear from Mark Potash, the Chicago Sun-Times sports writer since 1987. He's got thoughts on the Bears, their firing of Matt Eberflus, the hiring of their next coach. Also a guy with a unique perspective, Corey Curtis from WKRN-TV in Nashville. Why Corey Curtis from WKRN-TV in Nashville? Well, he's a Chicago guy. He's from here. And he was the longtime former co-host of the Mike Vrabel Show, a name that's getting thrown around a lot. So we'll talk with him about the Bears vacancy and the possibility of Mike Vrabel at 10. And Eric Edholm, one of my favorite people to talk football with from NFL.com. He'll be here at 11. And we're going to try and cover this Bears coaching situation from all angles, including what they do next. But I think we're still in the stage where, at least to start this show, where we got to look back at what happened, because somehow the more that we find out about the Bears leading up to the Matt Eberflus firing, the worse it is, the bigger a mess, the more chaotic it seems to have been behind the scenes and in the locker room under Matt Eberflus. And again, I do want to hear from you throughout the morning at 312-644-6767. But man, oh man, was this thing a mess, and has been a mess for a while, as detailed in The Athletic by both Adam Johns and Diana Rossini. And there's also a little nugget that I'm going to get in from Jason Leger from the Chicago Sun-Times. But in case you don't have a subscription to The Athletic, and I encourage you to do so, their Bears coverage is great, and really, I do think The Athletic is great, no matter what sport or what team it is that they're covering. But just in case you don't have that subscription, and you didn't read what went down in the locker room and behind the scenes leading up to the firing of Matt Eberflus, good Lord. And kudos to Johns and Rossini for getting these details and getting it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, in terms of talking to some players kind of off the record and them telling you how guys were really feeling and what guys were really saying leading up to the firing of Matt Eberflus. So let's go to Detroit, Thanksgiving Day. We all know what happened. I don't need to retell it. We don't need to relive that nightmare, do we? But after the game, in the locker room, Matt Eberflus is giving his old, you know, post-loss pep talk after he completely botched another late-game situation, and he's doing the old, hey, guys, we got to stick together. We got to keep competing. And guys, we're not here for that. They just did not want to hear that. Specifically, Jalen Johnson. One Bears player said Jalen went crazy He was very emotional and pissed, but rightfully so. He's been here longer than most. Said another player, he was going off more so at Eberflus. According to multiple players and staffers in the locker room, some players were asking why Eberflus didn't call a timeout. Other players got going too. Guys were furious, a staff member said. So we're hearing from players and staff members. It was an accumulation of this season. The locker room was ugly. Another staffer said there was a lot of yelling. Said the first player, we felt as players, it's been too many instances where we fought our way back into games to lose because of bad time management and decision making. Multiple sources added that the emotions were so high between the players and their head coach that Eberflus left the locker room immediately after his speech and the exchange with players. Just walked out. Nothing left to say here. Just walked out after that exchange. And this from Jason Leisure of the Chicago Sun-Times. Guys were ticked off. I can tell you what we think, one player said. It's not the talent. Man, that tells you that this has been brewing for a minute, that these guys were looking at Matt Eberflus and the coaching staff for a minute and going, I don't think the problem is us. And you don't, first of all, the fact that guys are coming out and saying this is a really, really bad sign. And I know Matt Eberflus ain't here no more, but even with that being the case, And kudos again to all the journalists who I've mentioned for getting these players to say this stuff off the record. But it's not a good sign that guys are willing to go out and talk like that. But it's also, even if they're right and even if they're justified, it's to me not a good sign when players are pointing fingers and going, hey, man, this ain't our fault. Everybody has a hand in this thing. Every single person who is letting Bears fans, every single person in the Bears organization, which is letting Bears fans down, has a hand in this thing. Yes, Matt Eberflus had a huge hand in this thing. And trust me, we're going to go through that between now and noon and just how bad it was as the Bears head coach.
Okay? The hell with them and the horse that rode in on them.
Exactly. Thank you, Les. But man, is it the things they're saying are bad, and the fact that they're saying them is so bad. It shows so much about the dysfunction within the Bears organization right now. But fast forward a little bit in this article from Adam Johns and Diana Rossini at The Athletic to the following morning when Matt Eberflus is holding his day after press conference. And I'm on the air with Hub Arkish on The Score going, well, he's holding his day after press conference. I guess he's still the coach. He even expressed confidence during that press conference that he would be the coach next Sunday against the 49ers. And then 2 hours later, they fire him. And again, this looks really bad and really dysfunctional. And a team source explained that McCaskey, Poles, and Warren were still meeting during the scheduled news conference. At that point, no decision had been made about Eberflus's future, so there was no reason to delay the presser, which might have signaled something big was happening. By the time the decision to fire Eberflus was made, the news conference was over. What?
I'm just going to tell you, that's a bad call.
What? First of all, you couldn't meet earlier? I know it was Thanksgiving, and you probably had a lot of turkey, maybe a few glasses of wine or whatnot. You couldn't meet earlier? You couldn't get up a little bit earlier to have that meeting before his 9 a.m. press conference?
Like, and this is coming from the guy who, as the team president, we watched him walk into the Hallis Hall building at, what, 5 in the morning
or
whatever?
He's up. He's up.
He's they're all looking for cranes, man. He's looking for those cranes.
They're all up. What do you... And even if, okay, it's the holidays. You don't want to get up early. You don't want to meet the night before on Thanksgiving night and ruin your holiday. But if you even know there's a possibility you're firing the guy, push the press conference back. They said they didn't want to delay the presser, which might have signaled something big was happening. First of all, something big was happening. Something big was happening. And if you come out of that meeting deciding somehow that you weren't going to fire Matt Eberflus after he stood there for 32 seconds with one of the dumbest looks I've ever seen on a human being's face as that clock ticked off and he left the field with a timeout in one pocket and an L in the other. But even if you somehow decided not to fire him in that meeting. You just come out later, send him out for his regular press conference and go, hey guys, it was Thanksgiving weekend. Everybody wanted to sleep in a little bit. It was a rough night. So we just pushed the press conference back a little bit. If you don't fire him, then there's nothing to sniff out. There's nothing to sniff out. But bottom line is, you did fire him. You knew there was a possibility of firing him, and you still sent him to work the next day to meet with his assistants, and then to go out and face the media when you knew there was a good possibility you would fire him. They fired him at the end of his workday. You ever been fired at the end of your workday? It sucks to get fired, period. You ever been fired at the end of your workday? I got fired at the end of my workday once. I was working at Blockbuster Video. Y'all remember Blockbuster Video? And I went out of that place like Scarface from the movie Half-Baked, for those who are familiar with it. And let's just say it was a dramatic exit for both me and Scarface. You don't fire somebody at the end of their workday. You don't do that. Even to the worst coach in the NFL, you don't do that. That just looks bad and, again, looks dysfunctional. And when it comes to future candidates, that's not something I want to really walk into. But guess what, guys? Would it shock you to know that the chaos and dysfunction in the Bears locker room didn't just start on Sunday? That this started in D.C. after the Hail Mary? And Matt Eberflus afterwards avoiding accountability for his own coaching errors, as laid out in this Athletic article. Players pointed to the play before the Hail Mary. Eberflus allowed Commanders quarterback Jaden Daniels to complete a 13-yard pass on the penultimate play and then didn't call a timeout before the Hail Mary to discuss his defense and calm emotions. When he was asked about it by reporters, Eberflus downplayed the importance of Daniels' 13-yard completion to Terry McLaurin and even doubled down on his decision, which many believe was among the mistakes. A player said that didn't sit well in the locker room. It didn't go over right, the second player said. That week is when he lost to defensive guys. As the Bears' losing streak expanded, there was a shift in tone and messaging from Eberflus when discussing the team's latest problems. He seemed to go out of his way to take the blame for nearly everything. His subsequent attempts to take accountability felt insincere to the players. As a leader of men, one player said, you're supposed to take blame for everything that happens under your watch. And this is where I get really, really ticked off. Because if he lost the locker room 5-6 weeks ago in Washington, D.C., after the Hail Mary and after not taking accountability for the play leading up to the Hail Mary, and that's where he lost a lot of the locker room, including his guys on the defensive side of the football. How was this not sniffed out until the debacle in Detroit? How? Like, whoever... And we're going to talk later in the show about the Bears' search for the next head coach, and we do have some details about that from CBS Sports. We'll get to that a little later in the show. But whoever is involved in the hiring and firing of coaches, and we don't really know. We don't know George McCaskey's role in it, how much say he has. We don't know Kevin Warren's say in it, how much say he has. We don't even know Ryan Poles, the general manager's role in it, and how much say he has. Because we hear whispers that maybe he wasn't the one that hired Matt Eberflus and wasn't the one who chose to keep Matt Eberflus, that there were people over his head who were making those decisions. But whoever is involved in that, for 6 weeks, this thing was going bad. This guy had lost his players, and you couldn't sniff that out at no point in a 6-game losing streak. And 6 games where every game, you could either say they should have or could have won those football games. Going in, they were either favored or at the end, they had a chance to win the football games and lost because either the team wasn't competing and was lackadaisical and unprepared, like we saw against Arizona and against New England, or when Matt Eberflus is just making dumbass decisions at the end of football games that are costing you wins. And at no point, did whoever it was that's making those decisions, George McCaskey or Kevin Warren or Ryan Poles, at no point did anybody think something seems off here. Something smells funny. This doesn't seem right, and this season is going down the tubes.
Terrible. Take a lap.
this season that we had so much hope for as an organization, after we put our fans through 2 years of losing on purpose to put us in this position where we and they can finally have some hope that this team could do something, that this team could win 9 or 10 games and go to the playoffs and give us meaningful football in December and January. You saw that slipping through your fingers and going down the tubes, and at no point did anybody step in and maybe go down and talk to players and go some of the team leaders and captains and go, hey, what's going on here? Something seems off. What do we got to do to get this thing right? Because we have an opportunity here with the number one pick in the draft at quarterback, playing his ass off. Maybe in line to be the rookie of the year. We have a defense that coming into the season was touted as potentially being a top five. We had thoughts of 9 or 10 wins and playoffs dancing through our heads, and it doesn't look like we're heading in that direction. What's going on here? Why is this not looking the way that we thought it would? And maybe a player says something. Maybe a player says something behind closed doors instead of waiting till after he's fired to go and say something to The Athletic or to the Chicago Sun-Times. And maybe, just maybe, if you do something sooner, whether it's after Washington or after Arizona or after New England or after Minnesota or after Green Bay, maybe, just maybe, this season could have been saved and salvaged somehow. Because it's not like you're getting blown out week in and week out. They've been in just about every game. They've lost their 3 division games by a total of 7 points. Think about that. They've lost their 3 division games by a total of 7 points. You're telling me that if you have a coach in there that these guys believe in, or a coach in there who's making better decisions throughout, but especially at the end of football games, that there couldn't have been a 7-game swing between those 3 losses, or that this team doesn't come out lackadaisical and unprepared against 2 teams that they should have beaten in Arizona and New England? This guy shouldn't have been brought back before the season started to begin with, but at no point did any of the powers that be or brain trust at Halas Hall during a 6-game losing streak, during which the head coach had lost his team after 1 game, nobody stepped in to say, hey, what's going on here? Why is this happening? Even after the Waldron firing. And this from the Athletic article. After the loss to the Patriots, meetings at Halas Hall grew tense. Some leaders even floated the idea of benching Williams in favor of backup Tyson Bagent, believing Waldron's system was hurting the rookie's growth. 2 days later, Waldron was fired. A team source said Warren wanted changes. Were they messed up with Shane and making him the coordinator? Was making him the coordinator to begin with? One player said.
But turns out I suck.
Dude said they just shouldn't have hired that guy. Whoever that player is, that's a cold-blooded line. Where they messed up was with Shane and making him the coordinator to begin with. Yeah, where that started to go wrong was in hiring that guy at all. It's what that player just said. I LOL'd when I read that line for the first time. But man, You thought about benching Caleb Williams instead of making a change at coach because you thought you were hurting the rookie's growth. How about making a change with the coaching staff if you felt like they're hurting the rookie's growth? Man, this is like, even when they do things right, they do it wrong. That's what really infuriates me when it comes to the Chicago Bears. Even when they do things right, they do things wrong. Like sending a guy out for a press conference when you're pretty sure you're going to fire him anyways. Like waiting through a 6-game losing streak as this thing got worse and worse and worse before anybody did anything instead of trying to salvage your season. And the fact that they are and have been so dysfunctional for so long makes me not even be able to be glad they made the right decision in firing Matt Eberflus and have any confidence or good feels whatsoever about what they do next. Like, they really make it hard to be a fan. They really do. Even with a potential superstar at quarterback, they make it hard to be a fan, man. They do. But I do want to hear from Bears fans at 312-644-6767. After we talk with Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times, he will join me, Rami Makhlouf, with you on a Sunday morning right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is live?
Yeah, we're not live.
I'm playing. good luck to y'all. I mean, he's a great person.
Those fundamental things, technique, all that stuff, details should have been well grounded, and they've had, and those are the last things you think would go wrong, because that's what your defense is all about.
Yeah, I would say that we've played well, at times this year for sure. You can look at the numbers. We've played well. And on third down, QB percentage, QBR, red zone, we've played really well in a lot of areas. All I'm saying is that we need to just tighten it up, bring it together. And the only way to do that is coming together. And we just got to do it better.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
What you heard there was Mark Potash, longtime Chicago Sun-Times sports writer, asking now former Bears head coach Matt Eberflus about the performance of his defense and the lack of some fundamentals. And joining me now on the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois is the aforementioned Mark Potash. Mark, thanks for taking some time out of your Sunday morning. How are you?
I'm fine, Rami. How are you?
Good. I think I'm a lucky guy to do this for a living, but I got to sit in studio for 4 hours with Hub Arkish on Friday morning, who's been doing this for as long as anybody. Now I get to talk to you, who's also seen a lot in this industry. So before we even get into the firing of Matt Eberflus, have you ever seen anything like the way that the last 32 seconds of that game played out on Thanksgiving in Detroit?
No, I haven't. In fact, after the Bears lost on the Hail Mary and then had the special teams fiasco with the block kick, I was wondering, what offensive mess-up can they have that would equal that? And I thought it would be some kind of fumble trying to run out the clock or something, the Herm Edwards play or something. And sure enough, they came up with something different. So I have to say, no, I have not, and literally did not expect that. But I knew something would happen, but that one takes the cake.
Yeah, they keep finding new ways, Mark. Okay, so now in the aftermath, given that they've never fired a head coach midseason and being around this team and around the Chicago sports scene as long as you have, were you surprised that they did it? Or even though they'd never done it, were you looking at this and going, they got to do something here?
No, I think this is something they might have done even if Kevin Warren wasn't in charge and as team president. And, of course, that's the big difference why the Bears why the Bears would do this. So to answer your question, no, I don't think anybody was surprised. We all expected it. That was one of those games where in college they leave the coach at the tarmac, and so it was that bad. And so for the Bears, who are at the opposite end of that spectrum, they never want to fire a head coach. They messed it up in their own way and awkwardly, fired the guy, fired the head coach. But to answer your question, I think people expected it. It was almost, it was such a huge buildup of all the, we've seen this happen. We've been in this situation so many times. I can't remember a time where a coach has fired himself as much as Matt Eberflus has, with all the things that have gone wrong around him and with him. So it was very clear what they had to do, when they let him go.
And I'm going to ask you if you were surprised by one more thing. The dysfunction and the chaos with which the announcement was made, with having him go out for his press conference 2 hours before the news was announced. Have you ever seen anything like that? Were you surprised that the Bears would do that? Something almost never see in the sport.
Well, Rami, I've attended a press conference where the Bears held a press conference to announce that they haven't hired, basically to announce they haven't hired a coach when they tried to hire Dave McGinnis in 99. So I can say, I've been there many times before and I've seen it, but they always find a different way. You know, this is, like I said, this is Hallis Hall dysfunction. This is the way they do business, which is not the right way. And the biggest, the reason to be concerned about that is because it just chips away at that of any confidence you might have that they're going to get the next one right.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't operate at a normal business function. You know, I always say if the Bears weren't selling an addictive product, football, they would have been out of business a long time ago, because there's no way you can operate like this and succeed. You know, without having a profit assured with a television contract, right from the start. So this is just the way the Bears do business, and that leads to the next issue, which I imagine is going to be one of the next questions: is where do they go now? And the problem is, whoever they hire is probably more than likely going to be the wrong guy. They just don't have an intuition about what it takes to be a really good head coach. The only guy who did was George Hallis, who went over his own GM's head to hire Mike Ditka, the last, really great coach the Bears had.
Talking with Mark Potash, of course, longtime Chicago Sun-Times sports writer here on 670 The Score. Rami Makhlouf with you on a Sunday morning. And I was going to hold that off till later, but since you just brought it up, let's look ahead to who might be the next coach. Mark, is there a name you have in mind, or are there certain characteristics that you have in mind? A lot of people want an offensive-minded head coach to pair with Caleb Williams, as we've seen that formula in the NFL throughout the years. Is that something at the top of your list, or do you have other things in mind when looking at this Bears coaching search?
Well, I'll be honest, Robbie. Like I said, I have no confidence that whoever they get will be who they think they're getting. There's a Ben Johnson whose offense gained 357 yards in the first three quarters against the Bears, and there's the Ben Johnson whose offense gained 48 in the last quarter that allowed the Bears to get back in the game. Which Ben Johnson do you think will end up at Hallis Hall?
Probably the fourth quarter one.
Okay, well, there you go. Mark, I mean, everybody becomes the worst version of themselves, even the guys who are good. So it's a crapshoot. I'm not very good at picking coaches either, I guess, but that's not my job. But I guess what I find interesting about this is that the candidates that I personally would like to see at Hallis Hall are not what they probably need, which is an offensive coach. They really need an offensive coach to be kind of mentally tethered to, that head coach, point guard, tethered effect of a quarterback and an offensive guy. But the guys I like the guys who intrigue me are guys like Mike Vrabel and Brian Flores and Bill Belichick. I mean, they are not what you would think on paper the Bears need. But frankly, I think they need someone who can shake things up and do things differently. That's really what the Bears need more than anything else. They need someone who is not the McCaskies need someone who is not like them. Look at it this way: their current interim head coach is a guy who they didn't want even as their offensive coordinator. Okay, Thomas Brown interviewed for that job, didn't get it, and they chose Shane Waldron. So that should tell them that their evaluation, their intuition about coaches, not so good. Maybe they should go an opposite route and take the guy they don't want.
To use a couple cliches, it sounds like you're talking about culture builders, leaders of men in terms of the type of head coach that you'd like to see him look at, and strong personalities. Do you think the McCaskies are scared of strong personalities like that? Or do you think that they don't know what to look for in a head coach?
First, absolutely. I think I'm not a psychologist, but sure. I think it's pretty clear that just their MO says that they are afraid. They are fearful of people who want too much authority. And, that's why Nick Saban did not come here. Another guy who would be on that list of guys who want authority. That's the whole thing with Belichick. He would want to take more authority than maybe Ryan Poles would be willing to give. And there was a time where I'd say, no, you really can't. You hired a guy to do a job. You really can't do that. Not anymore. If Bill Belichick wants to come in here and do things his way, I'm not saying he would be successful, because it is the Bears, and Bill Belichick is a guy who's won with one quarterback. But I would say, yeah, go ahead and do that. You got to take a shot. You got to do something contrary to what your previous thinking was. Because like I said, your previous thinking is just not working. It should be pretty clear to them, but I don't think it is, frankly.
Talking with Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times for a few more minutes here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Let's go back one more time, Mark. And I was just laying out some of the details in the weeks leading up to Matt Eberflus's firing, both from The Athletic and your colleague Jason Leisure from the Chicago Sun-Times. And it really seems like he lost his team after the Hail Mary and his not taking accountability for the play before the Hail Mary. Do you think this season could have been saved if that had been sniffed out sooner and this change were made 6, 5, 4, even 3 weeks ago, given how close some of these losses have been and what having a different head coach in there might have meant in those games? Could this season have been saved if the Bears had sniffed this out sooner, do you think?
That's a good question. I'm not sure if they, I think it would have helped. I mean, I think the better option would have been if they had made that move last season when they had a chance to go after a guy like Jim Harbaugh or some other, offensive coach. That would have been, that would have changed the season. But if they would have made a change now, I think it's very possible that they would have been better, but their schedule is so difficult that it might have been more difficult to really win more games than they're going to win, because that was another problem, is that they were playing really good teams, so you couldn't make those mistakes. So they definitely should have. I mean, they definitely should have known what they were getting, it all goes back to very early in the season when your offensive coordinator that you hired needed an intervention from your offensive captains, in week three. I mean, that should have told you that the guy you think is riding the ship is not actually leading the ship.
You know, we've talked about the people at the top. You've mentioned McCaskey. You've mentioned Warren. We've, of course, talked about the coaching. Right in between there is the general manager and Ryan Poles. And I was reading your piece on Ryan Poles at ChicagoSunTimes.com. I encourage everybody to go out there and check it out if you haven't already. And this is a guy who Mark, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago leading up to the season and all the hype and optimism about the Bears heading into the season had the nickname of King Poles among many Bears fans on social media. I think the King label has been removed, but how much of the confidence in Ryan Poles do you think has sort of taken a hit in the eyes of Bears fans and those with an eye on the Chicago Bears?
Well, if you want to put a number on it, say like 50% of it. I mean, there's two things about Ryan Poles. First of all, his manner, his MO, whatever you want to call it, his approach really is impressive. I mean, he's a guy who kind of has somewhat old school sensibilities, but he has a good grasp of new school approaches. And I like his technique. I like his vision. I like what he thinks he can do. But unfortunately, as we saw with the biggest move, which was his hire of Eberflus, his intuition way off. What he thought were the qualities of a good coach, and his projection of Eberflus as being able to go from DC defensive coordinator to a successful head coach, way off. Couldn't have been, his intuition or his judgment on that couldn't have been more wrong. So that's a huge hit for him, frankly. And not to mention, some of the other things. Now everything's are adding up. Valus Jones was a miss, and Nate Davis was a miss, and so these things are starting to add up, and so now it's a question of now he is also kind of a little bit target. Now we'll see what happens there, but I guess the sheen has been taken off a little bit of Ryan Poles after the great trade he made that netted the Bears, DJ Moore and Caleb Williams and others. So he's definitely I wouldn't say in the crosshairs, but at least certainly under a little more scrutiny now. And also the biggest thing is, the question is, after the Eberflus thing, is can he get the next one right? And that's where really that's something that's a total X factor. We don't, that's one of the qualities of a good executive is, can you learn, or good anybody is, can you learn from your mistakes? I'm not saying he can't, but until we see it, we really don't know it.
The other question I have, Mark, and this will be my last one for you, is he the one making the decision, or is he the main voice in making the decision in terms of hiring Matt Eberflus, keeping Matt Eberflus, and who the next coach will be? How involved do you think George McCaskey and Kevin Warren are in this, and how much do you think they're sort of handing him the reins and saying, this is your job, go find your guy?
I'll be honest, I don't know the answer to that question. A lot of people think that that was kind of an arranged marriage because of the way it worked out. It sure looked like that. But Ryan has just been so insistent, even to the point of doubling down last year, at the end of last year, about his belief and that was his guy, that I take him at his word that was his choice. Maybe the way he got it was a little strange, but to me that's his pick. Now, how much authority he has in all these decisions, that's really interesting because George McCaskey, frankly, shouldn't be in on any meetings. He shouldn't have been in on the meeting about this thing. He should have nothing to do with football operations at Hallis Hall. Over his 13 years as chairman, the Bears' record is so poor that it should be clear to him that he shouldn't have anything to do with it. And I think he understands that, but I don't think he understands just how severe it is and how much he needs to be totally out. So he should not be in any meetings of any – but I think he is, and I think that's a good point, that as long as he has any kind of influence, I think you're still seeing even a nodding, in agreement or whatever. I still think that's a problem for the Bears. And then I'll be honest, Kevin Warren's impact, I don't know exactly what it is at this point because he's kind of in between. He was hired after Ryan Poles was hired. So this is new territory for him as well. So all I can say about that is that's typical of the Bears where you just don't know exactly what's going on. And that's one of the reasons why they're in this situation again is because there's not this clear line of authority. They kind of need to do that and let people know exactly who is making the decisions here and where the lines of authority are drawn and the borders of authority are drawn. Otherwise, it just looks like it's going to be the same old thing.
That's Mark Potash, longtime Chicago Sun-Times sports writer. Follow him on Twitter at Mark Potash and my guest for the last few minutes on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Really appreciate the time and the insight on a Sunday morning, Mark. Go enjoy the rest of your day.
Thanks, Robbie. Same to you.
Appreciate it. There's Mark Potash. That was very cool. I've been reading Mark's work for a long time. I think that's the first opportunity I've had to talk with him, and he is just as wise and insightful as I thought he would be in talking about the Bears. And a lot of the stuff that I talked about with him, I want to talk about with you at 312-644-6767. And we're going to get into who the next coach might be coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. But what do we know about these Bears right now? I'll tell you that, and I'll also hear from you at 312-644-6767 if you want to line up, see your text. We'll get to all that next right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, and no doubt, Rich, the defending of that situation certainly played a part in Matt Eberflus becoming the first Bears coach in franchise history to be fired midseason. So here is where they stand. Thomas Brown, the former offensive coordinator, now becomes the interim head coach. He, of course, will get a look at some point about being the permanent coach. Ryan Poles expected to stay as GM and help Kevin Warren run the search for what should be a really coveted opening. I expect them to look at all the top candidates for Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn and Mike Vrabel. But here's an interesting name to watch. Cliff Kingsbury, of course, worked with Caleb Williams at USC, now thriving as OC with the Commanders, certainly one to keep an eye on.
We're back live with more Rami Metlock on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That was Ian Rappaport, excuse me, on NFL Network this morning, talking about the Bears opening and mentioning Cliff Kingsbury as a possible candidate. We'll go through some of those candidates coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. So far here in this first hour, we've laid out the chaos, the dysfunction that led up to the firing of Matt Eberflus and had that confirmed by Mark Potash of the Chicago Sun-Times that not only was all that true, but it's been true for quite some time when it comes to these Chicago Bears. And I want to ask a question, and I see you guys there at 312-644-6767, both in the text line and on the phone lines, and I'll get to you in just one second. But I think when something like this happens with one of your teams, or just in life, you know what I mean? You make a big decision to sort of reset things. I think it's a good idea to step back and like take stock, take inventory of what you know you have, and build from there. Sort of get that down as your foundation and go from there. And my question is, what do we know about the Bears right now in terms of what can you count on in the near future as they look for the next head coach and try and get this thing back on track? What do you look at this Bears organization? Not just what's on the field. What do you look at this Bears organization and go, okay, at least I know we have that? Because honestly, it's hard to find a lot of those things. It's hard to find a lot of those things that I know I can point to and go, well, that's good. I know that's good. No matter what else happens, I know that's good. We can start at ownership, and I don't think anybody here feels good when I say the name McCaskey. No matter what is in front of that, and George McCaskey is the latest to put a name and a face on it, but no matter what precedes McCaskey, I don't think any of us feel very good about that. Go one level down to Kevin Warren, and the guy hasn't really done a whole lot to instill confidence in Bears fans. He's still looking for a place to put a new stadium, which I think is something that we thought was closer to being done than what we've seen so far. Go one level down to Ryan Poles. He's done a lot of good things, man. He's done a lot of good things. But the Bears aren't where they are without Ryan Poles making a few mistakes along the way. And yes, this roster and the salary cap situation and the resources and the assets that they have in terms of draft picks in coming years looks a lot better than what it looked like when he took over. But the bottom line is, we're, for all intents and purposes, 3 years through a rebuild with nothing to show for it, with no competitive football to show for it. And that's the bottom line when you're talking about a GM. It's great when it looks great on paper, but at the end of the day, you need results. And Ryan Poles has not gotten that. And you will not find, try all you want, you will not find an organization in this league that is through 3 years of a rebuild with no results and their fans are feeling good about things and where they're headed. That's just not the case. He has shown an inability to hire competent coaches, and he hasn't been able to find offensive or defensive linemen. Everything else, he's done pretty well. But if you can't do those three things, that can collapse the entire process. It can bring the whole house down if you can't do those three things well. So I don't know that we have a very good GM. Go one level down, we don't even know who the coach is going to be. So I can't say I have a lot of confidence in that. And as I said, as Mark Potash said just a few minutes ago, I can't have a lot of confidence that they're going to hire the right guy when they do eventually name the next head coach. Because of, well, the Bears and the dysfunction that they are and have been for the vast majority of my life and your life, maybe your entire life, depending how old you are listening to me right now. So then we get all the way down. I'm not going to go beyond this. I'm not going to talk about like the janitors and the trainers and the people who clean up the locker room. But go the last level I'll go to is the roster. And what do we know we have in this roster? On offense, we don't have an offensive line. Got a good wide receiver core. And I'll include Cole Kmet in that. Still don't know about DeAndre Swift. I know we don't have a good offensive line. And I'm pretty damn sure that we have a great QB prospect. I just don't know that the Bears will squeeze all the juice there is to get squeezed out of that lemon, because they break quarterbacks. It's what they do. And they break quarterbacks because of the dysfunction that I've been talking about this whole segment and this whole show to this point. I've heard a lot of people say Caleb Williams is franchise proof that the dysfunction of the Bears or any other organization can't break this guy. You're wrong. They've already stunted his development. He could be further along than he is now. And if this goes on long enough, if this continues to go on with the next head coach, you will break that guy. And on the other side of the football, what we all thought we had in terms of a defense, even that hasn't been good. As of Friday morning, the Bears ranked 9th in the NFL in scoring defense and 19th in total defense. There aren't a lot of things you can point to and go, yeah, we got that. I don't know what else we got, but we got that. And that's what's most concerning about this Bears situation right now. I wish I could feel a whole lot better about them firing the coach and me sitting here going, all right, now what are we doing? But I can't do that. Do I have time to get in a quick phone call here, Sean? I've rambled on long.
We probably got a break here.
Okay, I do got a break. And I will get to your calls. I will get to your text in just a few minutes. Going to spend a few minutes with Corey Curtis of WKRN-TV in Nashville coming up next. Why? Corey Curtis from WKRN-TV in Nashville. He's the former longtime host of the Mike Vrabel Show. He's also a Chicago guy, so he brings a unique perspective to this whole thing and knows about a guy that a lot of Bears fans have mentioned as possibly being the next head coach of the Bears. We'll get your thoughts on that, who should be the next head coach, everything that's gone on to this point after I talk with Corey Curtis of WKRN in Nashville. That's next right here on Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.